on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Johnny B, Johnny Schmacks, thank you both for another entertaining afternoon of music, crack and chat. It is Tuesday the 7th of June. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Kilkenny legend Eddie Brennan will be joining us to chat all things hurling. Gary Murphy will bring us up to date on a potential seismic shift in the world of golf. Tony O'Donoghue will have the latest news from the Republic of Ireland camp. And Mark Langdon will be dialing in to box off all of today's international soccer news. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
GameOn on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Tuesday evening as we turn our attention to association football in the company of our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. And Tony, the news coming out of the Ireland camp is that Seamus Coleman will miss tomorrow's UEFA Nations League meeting with Ukraine due to a groin injury. Stephen Kenny said it's too early to tell whether his captain will be ruled out of the remaining games of this June international window against Scotland and indeed away to Ukraine. Gavin Bazunu, of course, misses out too as he has left the Ireland camp having fractured a rib. He was replaced in the squad by James Talbot, with his call-up meaning Friday's League of Ireland meeting of Bohemians and Finn Harps has been postponed. So Tony, Seamus Coleman missing, in general, Hello. Should we expect many changes to the starting team?
I think Stephen Kenny indicated today that there wouldn't be too many changes. You know, I think despite how poor the performance was in Yerevan against Armenia, you know, tinkering around too much would be like, you know, giving up on all the progress that had been made or had been appeared to have been made with the 8 games unbeaten. So he did say he wouldn't expect wholesale changes. You know, we had a setback. That doesn't mean that you have to take half the team out, he said. So there'll have to be some changes, obviously, with certainly out now. There's a vacancy at the right wing back, which I believe will probably be filled by Cyrus Christie. But then, you know, he did mention that Festi Ebosele, who wasn't even in the matchday squad in Yerevan, could actually, you know, fulfil that role as well. He also said Alan Brown had played there. Alan Brown of Preston North End, and more better known as a midfielder, but he has played the right wing back position as well. Then on the other side, James McLean was one of the subs. I mean, he didn't start against Armenia, but he, you know, for some of the bigger games, he has made an impact for Ireland. But as far as the centre of the defence is concerned, I think Duffy being put up before the media today, I hardly think that would have happened unless he was going to play. We knew coming into it he needed game time. He was one of the only players who played that trial match, if you like, against the under-21s, where most of them played a half an hour. Duffy played the full 60 minutes because his previous competitive game had been the Ireland international against Belgium. He's just been frozen out at Brighton. So, so Duffy will play. I think Nathan Collins did well enough in the first game to, you know, despite a shaky start, to include him in again. And I think John Egan will certainly play. So now you get to the midfield and, you know, were we happy with the amount of possession that we had? We had some possession, which is what we did or didn't do with it. That was more the issue. But I think Cullen will start again. And I think he's going to give Hendrick another chance, another player who didn't have enough game time coming into this. The rustiness was there. But unless you play more games, and remember there's 4 games in this window, well, where are you going to get match sharpness from? So I think Cullen and Hendrick will play. And then up front, well, Jason Knight came on as a substitute, and I think he's got a very good chance of starting at home. Chidozie Ogbeni, I feel he did win the player of the match, didn't he? He was probably our best player in Yerevan. And Robinson, although disappointing, we still feel he's probably our best goal threat. You look at the other players in the squad that are knocking on the door, if you like. Michael Obafemi came on, but was caught in possession, you know, in the middle of the park for the goal that they scored. And showed a little couple of flashes, but not enough, really. You know, maybe the step up to international football is much more difficult than Swansea in the Championship.
Indeed, and the games are coming thick and fast, as you mentioned, and you've been on media duty out at the Aviva Stadium all day, and we can actually hear a clip from Stephen Kenny. Here's the Ireland manager speaking on the unusual backdrop for a game.
No, it is. It is a very unusual game, and it's... the Ukrainian players and the coaches and all of the staff have been great ambassadors for their country amidst the chaos of their lives and of their, you know, compatriots really, and the thousands who have lost their lives. So by continuing to play, and they're bringing it, you know, they're keeping it at the forefront of the whatever country they're playing within the media. And within the European media, because obviously it's there's features across Europe on the Ukrainian team and their contribution and how they played and so forth in the games, and it just keeps the discussion very much at the forefront of the news.
Of course, Tony, Ukraine are coming into this one having missed out in World Cup qualification, having lost to Wales. And I saw some really nice pictures on the FAI Twitter today. So Seamus Coleman missing tomorrow's match, yet there was two Ukrainian children, I believe, at training today in the Aviva Stadium. And Seamus Coleman FaceTimed his Everton teammate, Mykolenko, and the faces on the two kids was his joy to behold.
Was wonderful, wasn't it?
It's absolutely brilliant. Because you mentioned, and listen, you've chatted to Stephen about this as well, it is such unique a situation that a football match is going ahead given what is going on in the background.
I was talking to Shane Duffy as well before the press conference today, and you know, I think we're not surprised at the fact that, you know, he and so many people were actually rooting for Ukraine against Wales. I mean, maybe Noel Mooney plus Welsh people were the ones most happy with Wales going to the World Cup finals. But, you know, the Ukraine story, they are representing a nation at war. They are representing a displaced people. And, you know, even in my own experience with Greystones United underage teams, my son is involved in one of the teams, and first of all we got two, then we got three Ukrainian under-11s who are based out in Greystones. There's Anton, there's Misha, and there's Dennis spelled with a Y, and what a player he is. And they don't have any English. They're going to school out there. They found new teammates. They're all coming to the game tomorrow night, and for them to get an opportunity to see their country's national team and players they'll be familiar with, and a chance to be with other Ukrainian people in Ireland. This is a very emotional and a very special occasion in that regard. From an Irish football point of view, I hope, you know, it'll be a wonderful evening and a welcoming evening, because Ireland has been a very welcoming place for the refugees, for the Ukrainian people. But I still want to win the match, and I still hope that Ireland do against the Ukrainian side that will undoubtedly be disappointed, because they even had to qualify for that playoff final. They had to go and beat Scotland. So Scotland, Wales and Ireland in a week and a bit is a tough ask for anyone, particularly under the circumstances in which those players and their families have been trying to continue with normality, if you like. But that's hard. That's a tough one for them to continue with.
Absolutely, it is a very unique Celtic challenge that Ukraine face. Well, it will be interesting to see how that one goes, and we will hope for a response from the Irish team, and it will be interesting to see what response we see from Ukraine as well. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you very much for taking the call. We will be continuing our football chat in a few moments time with Mark Langdon, but just before we take a quick break, a couple of other news headlines to wrap up from today. Jewel Cheltenham Gold Cup winner Albion Photo has been retired and will embark on a new career in eventing. The Willie Mullins trained 10-year-old will forever be remembered as the first horse since Best Mate to win back-to-back Gold Cups at Cheltenham in 2019 and 2020. Joining him in retirement is stablemate Mellon. In rugby, Connacht out half Jack Carty will miss Ireland's summer tour of New Zealand after undergoing surgery on his right wrist. And in ice skating's governing body voted earlier today, I should say, to raise the minimum age for senior competition to 17 months after an Olympics drug scandal involving teenage Russian Camilla Valieva. The decision by the International Skating Union Congress in Thailand lifts the age limit from 15 and will be phased in gradually, reaching age 17 in the 2024-25 season. And finally, some sad news from cycling. Three-time Tour de France winner Greg LeMond has revealed he has a treatable form of cancer. The 60-year-old American who won La Tour in 1986, 89 and 1990 went for a checkup after experiencing a few weeks of fatigue and received his diagnosis last Friday. A statement on his website notes, fortunately, it is a type of cancer that is treatable, and it is a type of leukemia that is not life-threatening or debilitating. So we certainly wish Greg all the best, a true legend of the sport. As I say, we will be continuing our football discussion in the company of Mark Langdon in a few moments' time, so do stay with us here on 2FM.
RTE 2FM. Game Game On.
On 2FM. With Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game On.
Football.
Hey, very welcome back to Game On as we continue our football chat in the company of regular contributor and head of sport content at the Racing Post, Mark Langdon. Mark, before we continue our football chat, my producer Ronan Lawler and Andrew O'Connor informs me you were at Liam Gallagher at Nebworth. I'm very, very jealous. How was that? Before we even start chatting football.
Yeah, that was really good. I went on the Saturday. It was an opportunity to relive my youth. somewhat remember going to see Oasis, many times previously. But I don't really know too much of Liam's newer stuff, but 3/4 of it was Oasis songs anyway. So, no, it was really good. He still remains a great showman, I think.
Yeah, it was very similar. I was at Noel Gallagher in St. Anne's Park in Dublin on Sunday evening as well, and a similar vibe of a lot of Oasis, which was wholeheartedly welcomed. But listen, let's get down to football. I was chatting with Tony Donoghue there about the Republic of Ireland and Ukraine match tomorrow. And listen, Mark, you do a lot of work over in England, a lot of different podcasts and a lot of different formats there. And I wonder, from outside of Ireland, what's the perception of Stephen Kenny? What's the perception of this Ireland team at the moment, like taking into account, yes, they did lose in Armenia, but overall?
I would say that most people don't blame the manager, certainly in terms of, whenever I'm on discussing sort of games from around UK, Ireland, Europe or whatever, it's more about, there's only so much you can do with the players you've got. That tends to be kind of the message that you get, and the vibe that you get, I think, from people, certainly outside of Ireland, I would say, that it's a difficult job at the moment because there isn't a Robbie Keane. And then if you look at sort of, Wales, obviously, qualifying for the World Cup, there isn't a Gareth Bale in the Ireland team. And, that one player can make a big difference. And I just sort of heard there, just going through the players that maybe didn't play so well in Armenia and the changes that potentially could be made for the next game. And, there aren't too many, real Premier League big hitters, are there, in there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose it is all about youth. And I was drawn to a graphic on RTÉ's television coverage because the Irish under-21s are flying at the moment. They're on the brink of hopefully qualifying for their first ever European tournament. And you look at the players in the senior squad: Gavin Bazunu, Troy Parrott, Nathan Collins, Festi Ebosele, Jason Knight, Michael Obafemi are all still eligible to be playing under 21 football. Likewise, Aaron Connolly, Adam Ida and Andrew Omobamadeli, who aren't in the current squad. So, listen, I suppose we've discussed this at length before, Mark, but it is a transition and it is about blooding these younger players through, I suppose. And again, is that something that's noticed outside of Ireland?
I think it is, yeah. I would say that there hasn't, not been a huge amount of reflection, really, on most of the games. I think it was the game away to Portugal, when obviously got beat quite late on. Cristiano Ronaldo did the business there, didn't he? But I think it was that game, really, that people actually said, oh, you can see what Kenny's trying to do with this team. And, the results that followed were mainly sort of on the upward curve. I do think that it's a big blow to lose that game. When I was on last week, in Armenia, when I was on last week, I was talking about the importance of the Nations League in terms of offering that sort of backdoor route into potentially qualifying for major tournaments. And I do think that for nations that are struggling to qualify, via the normal route, as Ireland are at the moment, it does give added importance, I think, to the Nations League. So it was a big backward step. The game against Ukraine probably comes at the perfect time, really. I mean, Ukraine, going to really be struggling, I think, to lift themselves after, what happened to them against Wales at the weekend. So maybe an opportunity to get back on track. And I think if you have a look at results all around the Nations League, actually, at this stage of the season, there's been some real odd results. So it's not just Ireland that have sort of fallen short. France haven't done well. England lost to Hungary. Spain have been dropping points in both their games. I just think it's probably come at the wrong time for just about every nation, isn't it, this round of Nations League games. But they are, there is a certain amount of importance to them, particularly lower down the sort of qualifying sort of path.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'd say the vast majority of our listeners will be hoping for a big response tomorrow. And don't forget, of course, it'll be a very special game on tomorrow evening. We'll have live commentary from the Aviva Stadium for the Republic of Ireland versus Ukraine. But overall, this Nations League, I mean, Mark, it's one of the busiest international periods we've had in quite some time. Ireland playing four matches in 10 days, like many other nations. And you've mentioned some of the big hitters, the traditional big hitters, dropping points, not getting the expected results. Do you put that down to fatigue and international players just trying to get up for the occasion after a long, grueling season?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, you look around and there's a lot of, even if it's not debut, sort of much changed teams that managers are putting out there. They're having to rotate. You know, you look at the sort of French team, for instance, that drew 1-1 against Croatia. Was that last night? The games are coming so freaking fast, it's hard to remember when they were playing. But there was no Benzema, there was no Mbappe, there was no Griezmann. So I think in terms of those teams that have already qualified for the World Cup, I think a lot of them, because there isn't much preparation time during next season, they're almost using this as just sort of fine-tuning a few things and looking at players, you know, just going in to the World Cup. And we've just seen so many odd results. Spain couldn't beat the Czech Republic, for instance. I mentioned that France one. One team, actually, that's playing probably better than most, and it'd be interesting to see how they get on it, is the Netherlands, because they've got Wales tomorrow. But I think Louis van Gaal has definitely got them sort of playing and heading in the right direction. They seem to be one that sort of, I suppose, are taking it that little bit more seriously at the moment. They beat Belgium 4-1 on Friday night, and you know, your Bergwijn and Depay, players that maybe haven't actually played as much this season. You know, both have been on the fringes at Tottenham and Barcelona respectively, scoring goals in that game. So it feels like it's, you know, if the fresher players are kind of winning out at the moment, and you know, maybe that will be important come the World Cup. You know, just who's got the fresher legs going into these tournaments, because it's been absolutely chaotic and almost ridiculous 2 years, really, of football, and it's not stopping, is it? You know, we've got a slight break, and then, you know, going to be one of the busiest seasons ever next year with the World Cup in the middle of the campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a purely selfish point of view, I cannot wait. Loads of football, a few Christmas pints, and the football on the TV. It's brilliant.
Yeah, you'd be able to do Christmas jumpers. I think people would be doing World Cup Christmas jumpers, I would imagine.
Perhaps. So, the big one in the Nations League this evening. Before we actually get to the big one in the Nations League this evening, any League of Ireland and Shamrock Rovers fans will be keeping you up to date on Cape Verde versus Togo, because Pico Lopez, I believe, is playing. That one kicks off in 5 minutes' time, so we'll keep an eye on that one. But the big one in the Nations League is Germany versus England, and Gareth Southgate was calling on, well, we will talk tactics and how teams will approach this one, but he was calling on fans to behave themselves. And unfortunately, the news headlines today, just before I came on air, I was reading that, Mark, England football fans in Munich have been arrested for making Nazi salutes and for damaging a hotel room ahead of the Nations League tie with Germany this evening. 8 England fans were arrested yesterday, actually, largely in the downtown area of Munich, despite insisting they were determined to repair their damaged reputation, particularly in light of the unsavoury scenes at Wembley during the Euro 2020 final. 3 of the fans were arrested for making Nazi salutes, while police said another fan caused an estimated €2,000 worth of damage after he let off a flare inside his hotel room. 4 others were arrested for incidents including insulting police officers and urinating in the street. Listen, there's a lot of talk about this with the pitch invasions as well. Like, I cannot grasp what makes a football fan switch into this thuggish mentality so brazenly.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think it's, there's obviously a section of it is tribalism, and, you know, when people are together, they maybe act differently to how they would if they were, you know, just walking, you know, on a family vacation or, you know, city break or whatever. But I think Gareth Southgate, and not these fans specifically, but he's spoken about England fans before, and just, you know, said that, you know, we've got a real sort of idiots who are following us. And, you know, he's right, and he's right to call them out. You know, they're forever, you know, bringing down the kind of the football team's name. And, you know, Gareth Southgate is just having to be asked questions after, you know, the fans. And he actually said before the trip to Germany, he's sort of sick and tired of even talking about them because nothing he says is making a difference. And I'm not sure really what else, you know, the national team can do about it, really. I mean, those sort of known troublemakers and those that have got sort of banning orders have to give their passports in every time England play. It's not the scenes that, we saw sort of, was it France 98, and you mentioned that European Championship final when things definitely went, you know, way too far. But England just brings out the worst in some people, unfortunately, and I'm not sure that that's ever going to change, and I'm not entirely sure what you can do about it, other than sort of banning every fan from travelling, which is something I don't actually like. I don't think sort of group punishment actually works because you are, I think, then just punishing too many people. But at some stage, it may reach that point where England fans are banned from travelling abroad if this continues.
Yeah, well, we even see playing behind closed doors doesn't necessarily mean playing behind closed doors.
Definitely not.
If you're to mention a couple of hungry fans. Listen, I do want to end on a positive note with fans outside the Allianz Arena because Miguel Delaney, who's been on the show before, has tweeted a picture. There is a mental health station in tribute of the late Robert Enke, the late goalkeeper who passed away not too long ago. So it is nice to see queues of fans queuing up there for a positive aspect. But on the match itself, I suppose, it is the pick of the fixtures. I know Italy are facing Hungary. I watched Italy against Germany, a lot of younger players, a couple of debutants for Italy as well, and they're trying to blood through some young players. Finland currently two up against Montenegro, and the rest are kind of okay-ish with respect to international matches. But England, they had a fairly strong team out against Hungary, and Southgate has called on more of his attacking players to start scoring as they prepare to face Germany this evening. The three Lions are looking to bounce back in Munich from Saturday's surprise 1-0 defeat in Budapest. Only three players have five goals or more: Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling and Harry Maguire. And it's going to be a stiff test on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't a good performance away to Hungary. Probably a 0-0 draw would have probably been the fairest result, but it wasn't to be. I think that getting the balance right for the team isn't easy at the moment. Certainly, you know, they didn't create much against Hungary, but most of their talent is in the forward areas, and you would imagine it's all about building up for the World Cup. So there was an opportunity to look at Jarrod Bowen. Maybe didn't have his strongest game. Alexander-Arnold, of course, only just come back from Champions League disappointment. Cole Walker hasn't played much this season either. So all kind of down that right-hand side, I think maybe, you know, the balance of that team wasn't great. And they do need to improve. I would expect them to improve. You know, there was a bit of an odd atmosphere in Hungary with, as you say, it was supposed to have been behind closed doors, but around about 30,000 sort of adults and sort of children were in attendance. But again, in Munich against Germany, I think will bring, you know, if there is any tiredness in the England legs, then this is the kind of game that will wake you up. I think Germany have improved since the European Championship defeat to England at Wembley. Hansi Flick, the new manager, has kind of brought through some younger players himself within that German team. So I think it's going to be probably a more competitive game than what we saw from either team at the weekend, because, of course, Italy are not going to the World Cup, so they're in a bit of the doldrums at the moment, and England seems to be going through the motions a little bit against Hungary. So I am expecting a better game, and it might give us a sort of stronger view as to where these two teams are heading into the World Cup. I don't think there's much between them. You'd maybe say that England have got more choices up front. I know you mentioned there about the lack of creativity against Hungary, but with Raheem Sterling back and Jack Grealish and Phil Foden and players like that, I would say sort of by December time, I would expect England to be a more dangerous team going forward than Germany. But Germany probably got the better balance in midfield. Like, so Joshua Kimmich is a tremendous midfielder, and Goretzka, he's Bayern teammate alongside him. So there's not much between them, I wouldn't have thought, and wouldn't be surprised if this one finished all square.
Well, it hasn't started well for England players because Phil McNulty, chief soccer writer with the BBC, has tweeted, England players come out to inspect the pitch in Munich, get a good soaking from the sprinklers. So there, it's not started off perfectly. Mark, before I let you go, you have your ear to the ground. Give me a few transfer gossips or a few transfer rumours, I suppose. I see the headlines here. Newcastle are in for a young French striker. Injured Mo Salah rejects Liverpool's scan request. Might there be a bit of disharmony there?
I'm not so sure about the disharmony with Salah. I think the obvious one to watch out for in terms of Liverpool is Sadio Mane. You know, Bayern Munich are in the market for forward players. Lewandowski said, he's been very strong, really, in terms of him wanting to leave Bayern Munich. So they're going to have money in their pockets. Those quotes from Mane about, sort of wanting to do what the Senegal public want him to, felt a little bit strange. I mean, Lewandowski said something's died inside me in terms of sort of why he wants to leave Bayern Munich. So I think he's really pushing to depart. So I would say Mane rather than Salah is probably the one to watch out for from a Liverpool point of view. I mean, one sort of old Liverpool player, Luis Suarez, being very strongly linked, I think, with Aston Villa. I was speaking to some Spanish journalists the other day that were sort of pretty sweet on that one potentially happening. I mean, not a cheap deal for Aston Villa, and he's probably past his best as well, but still a very big name. So that might be one to keep an eye out for. I think Manchester City will be in for central midfielder to replace Fernandinho and maybe a left back. Again, I don't expect them to sort of stop just because they've got Alvarez and Erling Haaland in.
We were wrapping up the Premier League not too long ago, and my moment of the season was seeing Christian Eriksen return to play football. So I have a bit of a grasp for Christian. Where do you feel he will play his football next year?
Do you know what? I know that this probably isn't the most popular view, but I wouldn't be amazed if he stayed at Brentford.
Okay.
I know that there's been links with Manchester United, there's been links with Tottenham. I think that what this could come down to is how comfortable Eriksen is and feeling at Brentford. And what he likes about Brentford is the free role that he's given within that team. And I just wonder whether that might be a really sort of decisive factor for him. If he goes to Tottenham, for instance, who he has been linked with that return, Antonio Conte, very demanding of his midfielders, and you've got to play in a certain way, it's all to a certain structure, isn't it? And I don't know, I just wonder if Eriksen maybe just enjoys the freedom of being that really big player for Brentford. I'd love to see him, with all due respect to Brentford, I'd love to see him really push himself and test himself at a big team again. And I think Manchester United would be crying out for somebody like him and that ability in midfield, and maybe there'd be a bit of sense to that. But I definitely don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he leaves Brentford. It's quite clear that he gets on very well with the manager, Thomas Frank. It's just, I suppose, I don't think it's about the money, it's just whether he wants to kind of play in a comfortable environment or really push himself.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see where he ends up, and indeed over the summer, the course of transfers that we look forward to speculating on as always. Mark Langdon, pleasure as always. Thanks for taking the call as we turn our attention to golf and a possible seismic shift in the golf world and golf landscape for future generations. Gary Murphy will be joining us in a few moments' time.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Golf.
Now, you are very welcome back to Game On. I am in the company of Gary Murphy, and there is so much to get through in the world of golf. Gary, before we chat, I want to start with one of the news headlines today, in that two-time major champion Dustin Johnson has resigned his membership of the PGA Tour in order to play in the Saudi-funded LIV Golf Invitational Series. The former world number one will play all eight events of the fledgling $255 million series, which starts on Thursday at Centurion Club near London. Johnson, who was 37 years of age, joined the PGA Tour in 2007. Now, there was a lot of clips from press conferences floating about today, but I do want to start the conversation with chatting about Dustin Johnson, and here's his comments on the Saudi-funded LIV Golf Invitational Series.
I mean, I think a lot over the past few months, but, you know, at that time I was committed to playing the PGA Tour. You know, I'm very thankful for the PGA Tour and everything that it's done for me. Obviously, you just said I've done pretty well out there for the last 15 years. But, you know, this is something that I thought was best for me and my family. And, you know, I'm very excited about playing. And obviously, you know, this is the first week. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's something exciting. It's something new. And, yeah, I think it's great for the game of golf. And so, you know, that's why I'm here. Obviously, at this time, it's, you know, it's hard to speak on what the consequences will be. But, you know, for right now, you know, I resign my membership from the tour. I'm going to play here, you know, for now. And that's the plan. You know, but what the consequences are going to be, I can't comment on how the tour is going to handle.
But regards to majors, are you?
Majors, I mean, it's, again, I can't answer for the majors. But, you know, hopefully they're going to allow us to play. Obviously, I'm exempt for the majors, so I plan on playing there unless I hear otherwise. I'm with Louis. I don't want to play golf for the rest of my life, you know, which I felt like I was, you know, probably going to have to do. You know, for me, this is something new. You know, I like to do a lot of other things besides golf, and, you know, I think this gives me opportunity to spend more time with my family, gives me opportunity to, you know, spend more time doing the things that I love to do, and, you know, and it's exciting, like he was saying, it's an exciting time.
So, Gary, it is an exciting time. It's good for the game of golf, according to Dustin Johnson. He won't have to play golf forever. And this is a man who has already netted $74 million in his career, yet he's chasing a few more quid by the looks of it.
Yeah, he certainly is. It's hard to believe some of the numbers. You know, allegedly he's getting $125 million signing on plus whatever he plays for. So, you know, it kind of defy any man really to turn down that level of money if he's going to play eight events. A $20 million purse over 3 years, he's probably going to earn conservatively another 20, you know, at least $15 million per annum minimum, you'd imagine. So it is astronomical money. How sustainable the whole thing is, I've no idea really. I know they're probably in for a 3-year period. And at that stage, age-wise, Dustin's going to be, what, 42 probably? And then if he does well on this tour and plays well on it, he's easily going to win two a year, I would imagine, the level he's still at. So, you know, what's his desire going to be at kind of early 40s with a boatload of cash to keep playing? So it's probably a no-brainer for him. Maybe he's a little more conscious about the finance. He's had a Hall of Fame career to date. Whether he'll get into the Hall of Fame, I'm not sure. It just depends how it rinses out, really. I think that the smartest thing that they've done is align the challenge or the Asian Tour to this tour. So that would be a way for guys to play, you know, more tournaments. Just playing the majors, you're only talking about 12 events a year, so... I think the problem with the tours as well is there's no downtime, there's no off period. There are times when you're not playing, but there are wraparound seasons. And you look at like someone like Shane Lowry, who didn't really start playing the PGA Tour this year until February, but it had started in September. So, you know, he would have been, I know he's done unbelievably well since he's come back, but, you know, he'd no FedEx points up, really. So there's no emotional break. So I think some of the guys are looking at it going, you know, we're going to play a shorter season, playing for a lot more money. Most of them are, you know, of the stars that have signed up to this thing towards the end of their career. So it's understandable that they're kind of chasing phenomenal amount of cash and they don't have to, you know, it's like, you know, you're going into work, you're getting paid 5 or 6 times what you were getting paid, but you're going to have to work a quarter of the time, so... bit of a no-brainer for guys that are that way inclined.
So we've DJ confirmed, Phil Mickelson confirmed, Graham McDowell, Kevin Na, Tiger Woods isn't. So he said he turned down a nine-figure sum. He was in the news today because he's confirmed he'll not play in next week's US Open, but still plans to compete at the 150th Open Championship at St Andrews next month, as well as playing in Ireland at the JPM Commandus Pro-Am. But in terms of the players who have gone across to the Saudi-funded LIV Golf Invitational Series, does that give the competition a bit more credibility, a bit more legitimacy, and does that increase the worry perhaps for the PGA Tour? Like, I'm asking that in a sense of, do you feel that entry into the majors or entry into the Ryder Cup, which I know Dustin Johnson was questioned of, you're putting money ahead of your country and representing, you know, the USA in the Ryder Cup, do you feel that there might be a bit of a backtrack from the PGA?
It's impossible, really, to... If you look at Dustin Johnson as well, I think he's 13th in the world ranking, so he's qualified. You know, he's a major champion. He won the Masters 2 years ago. So he's exempted into the majors for the next 5 years. You know, the majors have nothing to do with the PGA Tour or DP World Tour, so you can't really say, oh, you've gone off to play in the tour that is a threat to our tour, so you're not allowed to play in the majors. I don't know legally how that would have any ground to stand up. The only argument is that if they don't give world rank points for this, and then they tumble down the world rankings and they don't have a winner exemption, they wouldn't have an avenue to get in and play the majors. I think it's a major. It is a worry more for the DP World Tour, I think, than the PGA Tour. Because these guys are going to... I know there are events in the States, but you would imagine they, over time, they would be trying to take it out to Asia and break new ground in different territories and not be that, you know, direct opposition to the PGA Tour as such. But if guys are still allowed to play in majors, and you can play in 8 events at $20 million an event, and that's getting you up to 12, you know, and you could play a couple of Asian Tour events as well, the money's gone up on that. Plus, they do have a springboard from that tour to get into these tournaments. So that's going to entice a lot of younger pros to now maybe think, you know, I'll go east rather than going west at the start of my career and try and build my way up through the Asian tour and get onto this tour. So it's fascinating landscape at the moment. It's a big worry for, you know, the powers that be, the two main tours. The only counter-argument I would have is that, you know, they talk about allegiance to these tours. That you've an allegiance to a tour whilst you're exempt on it. When you're not exempt on it, you know, there's no allegiance to the tour, and the tour have no allegiance to you. And Graham McDowell is in a position where he's had a phenomenal career, you know, but he's out, performance-wise, he's out the other side. He's gone past his peak. You know, he's struggling to maintain his status on the PGA Tour this year. So come the start of next season, if Graham didn't keep his status, you know, he's going to be looking for invites to play in tournaments, whereas he's got an opportunity now. He knows where he's going to be for the next 3 years. He's still, you know, competitive, but he's getting a low money every time he tees it up here. So I think it was a bit of a no-brainer for McDowell. Is that going to affect the Ryder Cup? Absolutely. But Dustin Johnson has made the PGA Tour's life a lot easier by resigning his membership, because then there's no, you know, he's just playing a different tour. He's not involved in the PGA Tour, so that's kind of where that stands. But it's Taylor Gooch is the one. I know he's not a household name, but, you know, a young guy who's come out on tour and he's done very well in his first couple of seasons. I'm surprised that ilk of player has decided to chase the cash. The mindset is possibly that, listen, I have to make the cut every Friday to get paid on the DP World Tour, on the PGA Tour, whereas that is not the case here. It's 3 rounds, $120,000 last check. I just wish those tours were around when I was playing, but it is. And then the flip side is, do the Saudis pull the shutters down after 3 years if they've invested probably close to $2 billion and it hasn't really worked out? That's the question that no one really can answer at the moment, because then, are you in a situation where you've nowhere to play in 3 years' time and you might be in your mid-30s and, you know, still very capable? So I think their golden goose is possibly the Asian Tour as well. You know, they played in Flayley Hall in the north of England last week. It's 360 grand first prize, which I think was more than what the Porsche European Open was. So it's a big worry for the DP World Tour. Not really for their big events, but it's certainly a worry for the smaller events. I've always been of the opinion anyway that there's too much golf at the moment. There's too many tournaments. So you're always going to dilute the quality when, you know, you're selling your tour as a kind of 45 weeks a year. You know, where there's long off-seasons in all other sports, and there doesn't seem to be any off-season at the moment in golf.
Well, I do actually, you mentioned Graham McDowell. I do want to play a clip from Graham McDowell because he's come under a lot of scrutiny today, and he was in front of the media speaking on the tour event as well.
You know, what are the consequences going to be, and are they healthy for the sport of golf? I haven't resigned my membership from the PGA Tour as of yet. I don't really feel like I need to. I mean, but I also don't want to get involved in a legal situation with the PGA Tour. I mean, they've given me phenomenal opportunities over the last 20 years. I mean, it's just like, why as a player would I want to get involved in some sort of legal situation with one of the greatest tours in the world? You know, in regards to the Ryder Cup, it's something that I weighed up long and hard before I made the decision to come out here. I hope it doesn't affect that. You know, when you look at the European Tour and the players that are here this week, they've done a huge amount for the Ryder Cup product. It would be a shame to see those guys kind of be not invited back, if you like. But like I say, you know, is it healthy for the sport? This tour is designed to be an add-on to the greatest tours in the world. The schedule has been put together such that it aligns well with the PGA Tour, for example. You know, we all hope that, I mean, the success out here will, you know, continue to, you know, attract other players, and that, you know, the ecosystem of golf can, that we can all get on together. You know, it's just a beautiful sport, and this is not designed to be divisive. You know, this is designed to be something that works together.
Now, I do believe the press conference got a bit tetchy at times. AP journalist Rob Harris was ignored for a follow-up question on Saudi Arabia human rights, and then was eventually let out of the press conference as well. But my final question, Gary, because I know we're a bit pushed for time, Ian Carter on the BBC website wrote, "Before we get too romantic regarding the comparative innocence and sporting purity of the Ryder Cup, we should also remember that professional golf in its essence has always been about financial rewards. The very first money matches of the 19th century, big betting affairs led into the establishment of tournaments that paid prize money. They evolved into formalised circuits that led to the setting up in 1968 of the PGA Tour, and that itself was a breakaway from the Professional Golfers Association. For decades, this preeminent tour seemed an untouchable force, keeping the less lucrative European Tour in its place and fighting off Greg Norman's first attempt to institute a world tour in the mid-1990s. I mean, is the issue here that it is Saudi-backed and there's people being accused of sports washing, and that perhaps if it wasn't the money and where the money is coming from, that traditionalists mightn't hold the same view towards a breakaway tour?
I think from the American angle, the PGA Tour have used the Saudi money as, you know, it's dirty money, and that's the problem. Whereas, you know, a lot of the commentators who are working on golf channels in the States that are aligned to the PGA Tour are obviously trying to promote their brand. It's an easy pitch to say it's about the money, but it's really about the threat to their tour. You know, if the money was coming from whoever owns Amazon, if he wanted to set up a tour, you know, that argument wouldn't hold any water. So I think it's been an easy angle to do. It is a sports washing as such. But as you say, it's, you know, and Graham did make the point, which can't be forgotten. Like, he is running a business, so he's been offered an enormous pay rise. There's no one, you know, if someone in RTE got offered to go somewhere else to work for a phenomenal pay rise, like, everyone has a certain price. He's running a business. His business, if he loses the status on the PGA Tour, is probably going to be cut by 70-80%, and he's got an opportunity to do this and improve it. I think the Saudi angle is a bit of a smokescreen, in the sense that, you know, the fear is, are the top players going to end up on this tour? And that's ultimately going to affect the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. My only worry is, where is it going to be at in 3 years' time? And it's going to be fine for the top guys, but the middle-ranked players that decided to come ship could be in no man's land if the Saudis did pull the plug, if this doesn't work.
Yeah, because I know Graham McDowell was making a comparison with 2020 cricket, trying to modernise the traditional formats of cricket, and this perhaps can be somewhat seen as a new series, LIV ripping up the way that the professional golf game is played. 54 is LIV in Roman numerals, so that's where the name comes from, rather than 72 holes, a simultaneous shotgun start to reduce the TV viewing window to more manageable proportions and a team element. Gary, unfortunately we are stuck for time, but I do want to keep you on the line, because I know, Gary, you are, of course, our golf expert in Game On, but you're also a very proud Kilkenny man, and I'm delighted to say that former Kilkenny hurler Eddie Brennan, with thanks to the launch of Guinness's 0.0's GA campaign, yours for the taking, now with Guinness 0.0 100% Guinness 0% alcohol, more social occasions off the GA pitch are yours for the taking. Guinness, of course, proud partner of Croke Park Stadium, and the GAA is hosting midweek social events in GAA communities throughout the championship, as well as All-Ireland final preview brunches ahead of both the hurling and football finals in July. And you can log on to Guinness Ireland on Twitter for more information on tickets to those events. Gary, you're staying on the line, and Eddie, you're joining the conversation as well. Eddie, I'll come to you first and then I'll go back to yourself. Gary, Kilkenny Leinster champions, let's just start off there and get the Kilkenny chat out of the way before we delve into the hurling a bit more deeper. How pleasing were you to see it, Eddie?
Yeah, we were. We were happy enough with it. I think I went up with a neighbour of mine and our two young lads, and there was two very happy young lads going home Saturday evening. So in that regard, yeah, look, it's pleasing. I think, you know, in typical Kilkenny fashion, we take it, we enjoy it, and then obviously we're on to the All-Ireland series now, and I definitely think Kilkenny have work to do. But we're in an All-Ireland semi-final, and that's probably the most pleasing aspect of it all.
Gary, for yourself, as I mentioned there, a proud Kilkenny man, were you pleased to see the result? But judging by your Twitter, you weren't too pleased with the post-match antics.
No, I was delighted with the results, because I think they really had to dig it out. You know, there's their endeavour and the courage and just their scrapping ability to, you know, not lose that match was, you know, I think back in the great Kilkenny teams that Eddie was on, we had that, but we obviously had kind of, I don't know, minimum probably 7 or 8 superstars on the team as well. So the kind of dynamics of Kilkenny is a lot different now. You know, we're probably over-reliant on maybe 2 or 3, whereas we had 7 or 8 or even 10 at some stages. So we're definitely in transition. In reference to, I suppose, this non-handshake afterwards, I was really disappointed with Brian. I think, you know, as much as anything, I'm a fan of Kilkenny being from Kilkenny, but obviously a huge fan of the players. They've given us unbelievable experiences and emotions over the years. And Henry was the kind of, you know, the linchpin, or the king of King Henry, as he's known. You know, he was the superstar of that generation. Now, he's obviously moved into management. So the thing in Salt Hill was shocking, and Sunday was very disappointing. And I really felt for him, because he just looked like he was, you know, at no man's land. It's just unheard of, I think. You know, I don't mind two managers going out and having a big row on the sideline during a match, or even throwing a couple of digs into one another. But there always has to be mutual respect afterwards, that, you know, you've respect for the victor and sympathy for the loser. And I just thought, with all the messing that went on in Salt Hill, it was a chance to just bury it and shake hands and have a hug, and hopefully we'll see you in the final or whatever. But I thought it was very disrespectful, considering what Henry has done for the jersey. And GAA has changed. You know, it's no longer just one man, one county. There's great opportunities for these guys to go on into management. You know, and there's also a financial side to that, which they don't get as players. And, you know, Henry's trying to, you know, earn his stripes, and he's gone off to a different county. And I just thought it was disappointing. I thought, you know, considering the success Kilkenny and because of that Brian Cody's had over the years, I thought he should have been a bigger man than what happened. And that really annoyed me, because, you know, Henry has given us so many great days, and I just felt he looked embarrassed on the sideline. And then to see him wait out in the tunnel and shake all the lads' hands, I thought it was great, but it was just disappointing.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing to see. Eddie, I do want to move the conversation off, because I know we are a bit stuck for time here, on a great weekend of hurling. So as a spectacle, both the Leinster final and indeed the thriller down in Thurles as well with the Munster final, it was an exceptional weekend of hurling.
Yeah, it was. And Gary said it there. I think the Kilkenny Galway match was a different game. It was an arm wrestle, and I think equally the Munster one could have gone that way too, because you're saying sometimes conditions don't lend itself to really skillful hurling. But you know, we got an absolute belter. But I think equally the Kilkenny Galway one was intriguing from a different point of view, because there was obviously a lot at stake. But the Munster one, we've looked in for long enough, and I've always kind of said no appeal to me as a player. I didn't, you know, but you do respect it, and when you get your showpiece events, that's why it will be very difficult to move the GAA Championship towards a kind of a league-based format or something like that, because the Munster final throws up that. Two brilliant teams went at hammer and tongs, and you'd have to say, you know, Brian Lowen's interview for me summed it up. He was crestfallen afterwards, and you could say they came there to beat Limerick, and they were close to doing it, but you have to hand credit to Limerick. And like Gary said there, it reminds us of ourselves a little bit, and I'm not trying to Jesus dwell in the past. When two guys are held, like Hegarty got a great goal, but he was relatively well held. Shamey Flanagan comes up with the scores. Gillan comes up with big scores. That's what Limerick do. They have a spread of players. So if you decide to target one or two, they have other guys there. So hats off to them. I think from our perspective, we obviously want to see our own county succeeding, but I'd have not but admiration for Limerick. They're worthy champions at the moment, and they are going to take serious stopping.
In a word, Eddie, because we are bang out of time, can or could Kilkenny get the better of Limerick? If that was to occur?
Never say never, but we have a bit of work to do. But if I was in the Kilkenny camp and we got a crack at them, I'd love it. I'd love nothing more than a cut off. It tells you you're either good enough or you're not. And sure, that's what sport is about.
Magic. Listen, Eddie Breddon, I do apologise. We are stuck for time, but I'm sure we might get you on again and we chat hurling. A great weekend last weekend, and hopefully more to come. My thanks to Gary Murphy, my thanks to Eddie Breddon, my thanks to you for listening. Tara Kumar is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. But from all of the Game On team, it's bye for now.
RTE 2FM. Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.